From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 244, recorded live Thursday, December 9th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Benjamin Vanderveen about his C# web server, Kayak.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am here today in the rain in Portland, Oregon, sitting in the home of Benjamin Vanderveen. How's it going, sir?
Very well. How are you?
I am very wet. It's flooding outside with rain, but we're surviving. Today I wanted to talk about some cool open source stuff that's going on, because I think that there's a kind of multiple levels of open source that happen in the .NET universe. You know, there's like your conventional standard stuff, like your log4nets and your nunets and things like that. And then there's, more kind of emerging kind of cool stuff happening in open source. And you're involved in some of that.
That's correct.
So talk to me about what Kayak is.
It's a web server written in C#. The whole thing's implemented in C#, and basically, it's kind of cool because you can just fire up a server with like one line of code, start it up, and it's all within your process. And there's no crazy hosting containers or anything complicated to set up. You just instantiate a server, and you're off to go. And it's pretty cool because. Or at least for me, it's been a really fun kind of architectural experiment, learning a lot about server architecture. And honestly, I've probably rewritten it a good 6 times since I started. And it's just been a really great learning experience for me, and a great way to kind of get out in the community a little bit more and get some feedback on my designs.
So you say it's entirely written in C#. So at what level do you hit like unmanaged code? Do you use something else for HTTP, or do you use something else for sockets? Like, at what point do we hit metal?
So in the current version, there's actually the network layer is swappable. I have an interface called iSocket, and I have a basic implementation using system.net.sockets.socket, and I also wrote a libevent2 library, or wrapper library, I should say, which is called ORS. Mm-hmm. And that actually makes pinvoke calls into libevent2.
What is libevent2?
It's a C library written in C that sort of wraps up your epoll, your select, and all these different non-blocking abstractions that are available on different operating systems. And it also supports IOCP on Windows as well. So that I chose to go that route rather than calling a particular operating system's APIs directly. Mm-hmm. Just to get that built-in platform independence that libevent2 gives, and I've seen really good performance statistics about it, so seemed like a good choice at the time.
So is this a replacement for like IIS and Apache, or is this live in another world? Like, are there reasons I would want to continue to use IIS and also use Kayak, or do you have like great aspirations to like topple these other web servers?
Well, so maybe I started out like that, but a few years down the road, growing older, it's evident that those things are pretty well entrenched. But I think there's definitely an opportunity here, and particularly with this new specification that I'm authoring called ON. ON is going to be.
Owen? Is that an acronym?
Owen, yes. Owin. Okay. You can see this if you go to owin.github.com. You can check out the specification. And basically the goal here is, so there's lots of people writing, different servers, different frameworks, of course, all the Microsoft stuff that's already there. And what we're lacking is some sort of common interface where servers and frameworks can talk to each other. So now my thinking of Kayak is, I've learned so much through the process of just iterating on Kayak, and I've come to the conclusion that we needed an interface like this, and there's kind of a critical mass in the community now with people who are on board with this interface. My goal for Kayak now is just to be a really fast, simple ON server that runs on Mono and on Windows. And, is just a simple, solid ON host.
So ON stands for?
Oh, I'm sorry. ON stands for Open Web Interface for .NET.
Okay, cool. So let me see if I understand. So we know already that we've got Visual Web Server, Visual Web Developer Server. This is the tiny web server that comes with Visual Studio. It used to be called Cassini. And that was a tiny little C# HTTP server. It was very, 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 very basic. That was years and years ago. We've got IIS, which is our kind of industrial web server on Windows. We've got Apache, which is our industrial web server on Nix. And now Kayak is a C# web server, and a web server done entirely in C#, but it seems to me like its niche is that it runs in process, that I could host that inside of anything.
Right,
so if I had some app that I was running, and by the way, that app needs a web server that I need to run on a user's machine or something lightweight.
Yeah.
I bring Kayak in.
Totally. That's another use case that people have kind of found for Kayak. Wasn't one of my original goals, but in a lot of cases, I've had people come to me like, this is great. I just needed a little web server to do a little thing real quick, and Kayak, did what it said on the 10, and it's just mm-hmm. awesome. Thank you so much.
That's cool.
And that was really nice. And I'm not sure, but it might not be difficult to port to the iPhone under MonoTouch. Haven't tried it myself yet, but I don't think there's any reason why that wouldn't be possible.
See, that'd be very interesting, because on phones, you've got things like Dropbox and Docs2Go and things like that, that when you fire up the application, they host a web server so that other people on the same wireless network can talk to your phone and you can share documents and stuff.
Totally. That would be a great application for this.
So the idea of a tiny managed web server is really useful. I mean, we could certainly try to get this running on Windows Phone as well.
Definitely, definitely.
Okay, so we've got this kind of this gradient of different web server implementations, Kayak being one of them. And then I started asking you about interfaces and kind of at what point do you hit the metal. And there's lots of different ways to talk to sockets, right? Not just the Windows way. Also things like libevent too, like you pointed out. There's other implementations of ways to talk to sockets as well. Then there's http.sys, HTTP listener, and things like that that are kind of built in Windows. Are you saying that this OWIN, Open Web Implementation for .NET?
Interface.
Open Web Interface for .NET is kind of an intermediate abstraction for all of those different implementations of sockets and things like that on multiple operating systems.
Right. Yeah. It's going to target Mono, and of course Mono targets all different operating systems. It will work on regular .NET as well. So the idea is basically, it's this interface between like something which can provide HTTP requests and mm-hmm. Send HTTP responses to a thing which needs to handle requests and generate responses. Mm-hmm. So servers and frameworks, if you will. And the cool thing is once you get an interface like this, you can then compose it, kind of at arbitrary depth. Of course, it enables the creation of middleware is another way to put that. In Python, we have WSGI, and in Ruby, we have Rack. And these guys are really big into their middleware.
Well, Rack was my next question, actually. And this isn't middleware in the classic enterprise sense of the word.
Yeah,
this
no.
This is just the middle part of the hourglass. You've got this hourglass and you've got all your web app above the middle part, the tights kind of interface at the in-between. And then you've got all of your threading models and your how do you talk to sockets at the bottom part of the hourglass.
Correct. And then these components can sit in between that and, do things like, gzip the output from your web application mm-hmm. or,
add headers.
Add headers, things whatever. Like that, definitely.
So are you saying that OWIN has the potential to be Rack for .NET?
That is absolutely what OWIN is.
Okay, so if you're not familiar with Rack, this is a Ruby thing, a Rails thing,
yeah.
right? That allows you to sit on top of really any implementation of anything on the bottom, any web server, any socket implementation, as well as put things on top of Rack.
Correct. Yeah. Now, WSGI and Rack, WSGI is like the Python version of the same thing you just described. Mm-hmm. WSGI takes a sort of a more minimal approach in Python, you know, with their peps and everything. It's actually codified in this like nicely articulated specification. Whereas Rack is, I think there might be a specification. It's not as well articulated and precise, but
it exists. So it's a de facto specification.
Right. Exactly. But the difference there is that Rack is, it's also a library that includes lots of middleware and does lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, Owen so far on the discussion list has been taking the more of the WSGI tack, where it's just kind of a minimal set of interfaces. We're just looking to ship a single DLL with three interfaces: iApplication, iRequest, and iResponse.
Hmm.
And then that will be all. And then after we kind of get all of that nailed down and all the language and specification testing and stuff revolving around that, I think through that process, we're going to probably see the creation of like on.extensions library where
.contrib or something.
Yeah, something like that, where we have a lot of methods that make it easier to work with the base on interfaces and implement a lot of patterns that framework developers are going to have to use.
So a while back, I gave a talk and I made the comment that I felt that the pieces of software that were coming out of Microsoft lately, you know, kind of all that pile of beta that we've been releasing over the last kind of 9 months that we're going to kind of finalize next spring is, I started referring to them as Lego pieces. And I was like, you know, finally we're getting the right sized Lego pieces. It feels like what you're trying to do with this, Owen, is, to put it in Lego terms, you're basically deciding on the size of the little, what are the little things on top of the bricks? You know what I mean?
The nubbies.
The little nubbies. You're describing the size and depth and specification of the nubbies so that you've got some Legos and I've got some Legos and WCF has some Legos and OpenRasta has some Legos and, oh, I want to put it on Linux for a second and, oh, I want to run it on an iPhone or I want to run a Windows phone. Once you agree on nubbies, we can all start building Legos together.
Yep.
And suddenly things become combinable in almost an exponential way.
Yeah, and I think that's really one of the huge powers of the Python and Ruby communities with their WSGI and their Rack. There's so much stuff
going on. You keep saying WSGI. What does that stand for?
Oh, I'm sorry. WSGI is WSGI. It's Web Server Gateway Interface. It's PEP 333 in Python. PEP is the Python proposal for the enhancement of Python.
Okay. Because you know, a lot of the people who are listening won't know a lot of those acronyms. And then, of course, our non-English speaking listeners often don't understand when we take up an acronym and we pronounce it. So that's why I bring that up. So, interesting. And do you see that, what kind of interest are you seeing? Like, are you talking to people like Glenn Block from WCF? And are you talking to Sebastian from OpenRasta and the different folks that are interested in this space?
Yeah, it's been great. We've got a lot of interest. Glenn has been on the mailing list and he's been contributing. Sebastian also in particular he's just incredibly intelligent, knows his RFCs like the back of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And, his input has been extremely valuable. Also, Ryan Riley, who's putting together his implementation, of the host side is written in F sharp and it's called Frack. And he's got a framework he's working on. That's a Sinatra clone called Frank. And I really like those names. And then also, Andreas Hawkinson, who's, got his Nancy framework, Jackson Harper, Manos de Mano, Jeff Hardy, WSGI. All these guys are contributing. It's been a great discussion. Really appreciate everything that they've had.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TLERIK. Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. Now, you just brought up something interesting. Now, I realize that for the folks that are listening, they're hearing a whole lot of terms that they've never heard about before. But the terms are usually referring to, like we said, the middleware things, just that all of which have a corollary in the .NET world. So, like, but you mentioned Frank and Nancy Sinatra, and I think that there's something interesting about that, because Sinatra is a way to write some, you know, REST-like services in Ruby.
Right, yeah, it's originally a Ruby REST DSL, so, if you will.
Frank and Nancy, what are Frank and Nancy other than being father and daughter of the Sinatras?
Yeah, and clever names for frameworks. So Frank is Ryan Riley's F-sharp web framework that is basically a Sinatra clone. And it basically allows you to, you know, say something like write code that looks almost like an HTTP request. It says like get and then some path, and then you write a little bit of code and it returns like a response object. And that's basically the pattern,
right,
with Sinatra. And Nancy is a C-sharp Sinatra clone as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I saw these, they looked to me like really, really terse kind of DSLs, domain-specific languages for ASP.NET MVC, except the routing and the controller are together. Like in ASP.NET MVC, if I wanted to make a very basic GET service that returns JSON, let's say that's because, you know, with all of these, that's kind of your hello world. It's, you know, hello JSON, hello JavaScript object notation.
Right.
You can say in MVC, you'd say something like have a home controller and have a books method, and that returns, you know, an action result. But you need a routing table off in this other place, and then you would go and get your database stuff, and you'd return your JSON. But you need two files and you need infrastructure. But for a quick and dirty JSON thing with Sinatra, you basically write one code block by which you say, here's a get, and when the URL looks like this, go do some stuff. So it's almost as if they tacked the routing on top of what I think of as an action method in MVC. And it's all in one place.
Yeah.
So in the .NET corollary, you've got like ASHX files. It's like one page, and this is an HTTP handler. But HTTP handlers are very low level. HTTP handlers have process request. So this is almost like the Sinatra stuff for .NET would be one level above an HTTP handler, but a level below like a full MVC framework.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Do you think that's a way to be writing things? I mean, I think there's a lot of, what I'm hearing here is that people want lightweight, quick, fast ways to write basic web services. And they're not web services in the SOAP sense. And sometimes not even in the JSON sense, like, you know, POX, right? Plain old XML. They just want to get something out of the database as quickly as they can and get it out, because they're going to manipulate it on the client side. They right. want very, very lightweight servers.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, now is the time, I think for the past, you know, 5 years or maybe a little before that, we have seen a lot of people kind of fumbling around with mm-hmm. REST architecture and stuff, but it's really gone mainstream now with Twitter, Facebook, and all these other APIs out there now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, you know, I would love to see. And, you know, to that end, I'm doing all of these, you know, interested in all these technologies. I would like to be able to see like these really kind of minimalist, simple JSON APIs coming out of .NET services. And that, you know, originally my original use case for Kayak was exactly that. You know, we didn't need templating, we didn't need sessions or any crazy things like that. And so, you know, really we just wanted to be able to like pull an object out of the database, send it as JSON, mm-hmm. and, you know, get on with our lives. And I think that, you know, the syntax of Sinatra and clones of that are really, really enables that sort of thing to be done very quickly and easily. And I think it's kind of the no-nonsense approach that's been very successful in the dynamic languages community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that .NET has a lot to learn from that, if you will, and that there's a lot of potential here. In particular, because, I mean, .NET, and we all know, is going to perform a lot better under a lot of circumstances than some of these, you mm-hmm. know, Python and Ruby and things.
That's an interesting point you bring up, though, because you're someone who lives in both worlds, right? You've got a head in .NET and a head in the dynamic world. And here in Portland, Oregon, this is a real dynamic town.
Oh, yeah.
I mean that in, you know, in quotes with tongue in cheek, but they don't like .NET in areas of Portland.
Yeah, they hate it around here, close in, southeast and downtown. Let me tell you, I get funny looks on the street.
But the thing that I think that people forget, and I say this not as a .NET apologist, but as someone who's been working in it for, you know, darn near 10 years, is that it's fast as heck. And sometimes I see a lot of these younger guys talk about their performance in Python and Rails, and they just don't realize the scale that you can, you know, the amount of throughput you can get with .NET is bananas. And I've always felt that if I could have the syntactic aesthetic of a dynamic language and of JSON and the cleanliness of a DSL to describe some of my services and the speed of the CLR, then now we're talking.
Yeah, it's a great sort of crossroads between all of those things that you just mentioned, and I think for that reason there's a lot of potential here. And it's kind of amazing to me actually that it's taken this long, but now that it's happening, it's really happening quickly. There's a lot of people mm-hmm. who are really big in the community who are behind it, who have had these ideas, but just it hasn't coalesced until now.
Yeah.
And it's just really exciting.
Well, one of the things that I've been really interested in is how quickly it took us to go from angle bracket delimited files to curly brace delimited files. You know, we're pushing JSON around more than XML faster than ever. I noticed, I think it was a Forrester article just 2 days ago that said that in 2009, 40% of APIs, and when I mean APIs, I mean social APIs, public APIs like Twitter and Facebook, something like 40% of them were JSON. Today, 75% of APIs are JSON. Like, JSON has won.
Yeah, and for good reason. It's much, much less verbose than XML, easier to write, easier to read, easier mm-hmm. to parse. XML just has no analog in, like, common data structures in most programming languages, whereas JSON, like, you have arrays and dictionaries, strings, right. numbers, and Booleans. Like, every programming language has that.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to work at Nike in 1997. And my buddy Sean McRavy and I were at Nike building their order, it was called OMA, Order Management Application. It was an internal application written entirely in Java, used hot Java and old Unix machines, and it was done in Netscape timeframe. And we created this thing called a field dictionary. And field dictionaries had names and values and links to other field dictionaries. It was JSON. We just didn't know it until 13 years later, and we go, oh. You know, we kind of, you know, and when I say we invented JSON, I mean that like jokingly, because everyone invented JSON. Everyone right. who used to pass hash tables of hash tables around invented JSON. You know, it was just one of those things that just kind of came together. But the brilliant thing about JSON was that there is no marshalling of data from one format to another.
Right.
Because there's so many systems where you pull something out of the database and you think about tables, and then you put it in XML, and then you shove it across the wire, and then you turn it into JavaScript, and then you mess around with it, and then you reverse the process. And these multiple transitions are such an uncomfortable thing. So now, if we can figure out that the quickest way to get data out of a data store, whether it be Mongo or Raven or SQL Server or whatever, get it into JSON in a format, project it, because I mean all of these things like Sinatra, these are all just projections of JSON out onto the wire, do some stuff on the client with something like Knockout JS or jQuery plus templates, and then bring it back. You've got a really lightweight three-tier application right there.
Yeah, and definitely, and even beyond just going to JavaScript, it does great with mobile, and you know, for me that's the biggest thing. Like, I kind of pride myself on being a full stack, if you will, programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of having understanding of the database, the web services layer, all the way to the UI. And for me, that's mobile, and JSON is definitely the way to go. Over XML, particularly on the iPhone, it's much easier to parse mm-hmm. JSON.
What do you use for parsing JSON on, do you use JSON.NET in the .NET space? Or what do you use for parsing your JSON? Because there's about four or five JSON deserializers.
Yeah, I've actually had pretty good mileage with a library called LitJSON.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty simple, and it's kind of has like a whole lexer and all this complicated linguistical parsey stuff. This is in .NET, though? Yeah, this is in, it's written in C sharp. Yeah, pure C sharp.
Cool.
And it's pretty cool. My one beef with it is that it's not evented, so I couldn't, you know, kind of do it in an unbuffered way. I have to buffer the entire JSON, you know, request or response in memory, you know, before I can parse it or output it. It's all going to be hanging around in memory.
So it's kind of a DOM. It's got to hold it there for a second before it does anything.
Yeah, right, exactly. And there's this C library called Yagl, yet another JSON library, and it's actually an evented JSON parser. And one of these days, I'm hoping me or somebody's going to get around to writing p-invoke bindings for that and getting it on .NET, because that would just be awesome.
So let me ask you this. As an open source developer, as someone who is got your fingers in a lot of different pies, there's something like 3 million C-sharp developers and untold millions of Visual Basic developers, right? We're talking about millions. But for libraries like Kayak and all these different libraries, it seems like there's always just thousands. What is it going to take for the .NET community to embrace some of these libraries in the hundreds of thousands or millions? And, you know, what can Microsoft do to make sure that kind of happens, you know what I'm saying? Kind of take it to the next level. Is it just awareness, or do we have to build this stuff in before people get it? Because, you know, sometimes Microsoft gets people mad because they'll take an idea, they'll, you know, whether they embrace and extend or brace and ship or whatever, right? But like as a developer of Kayak, let's give that example, right? What's success look like to you? Is it just that, hey, I use it? Or do you want like a jQuery level of success where everyone uses it?
I mean, that would certainly be nice. I think Kayak is going to be a little bit more kind of obscure or obtuse, if you will, than say jQuery.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, I think that there's a land grab here to be had. I mean, there's a couple other guys on the list here that have, you know, sort of competing, if you will, implementations. So I think that it would really be great if you know, there's just like a community of, you know, maybe a few thousand users who are sort of the more technical bent and can get in there and, you know, build stacks up for themselves based on Kayak and, you know, really make the custom web stack that they really want out of life.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is the ultimate goal for me.
Is that the split, though? Because, I mean, I think there may be people who are listening to the show who might say, well, I just want to use the stuff that's going to be supported, or I just want to kind of get her done. You know, they want to use the stuff that Microsoft ships. How do we get those people excited and feel, not just excited, I think a better word would be empowered, unafraid to go out and say, you know, I am going to own my own stack. Because the issue is that some developers might have some business problem that they want to solve, like insurance or healthcare or whatever they're in, right? And like he might say, hey, I do health insurance. I don't care about an HTTP parser in C#. But they may find that they may have more fun and be more productive if they, in fact, kind of get off the beaten path a little bit and try something different. Or do you think this will always be niche and the bright line is, you know, someone who wants to work on his own car in his garage versus someone who just takes this car into the shop?
Right. Yeah. Well, for me, it's definitely been, and like I said earlier, an architectural playground, and I definitely need to clean it up a little bit. But I think really the power here is in this space is not so much Kayak specifically, but the ON specification itself. So with that, you know, it doesn't matter if you want to use Kayak or if somebody else comes along and writes something that's way better and way faster than Kayak, or if someone wants to get, you know, a wrapper around IIS or whatever, they can do that. Or if they want to make their own framework that can run on any of those servers, then all they have to do is implement against ON and there you have it. You know, that enables you portability of your applications, composability of your middleware, just this whole smattering of great new things, which I feel like we just haven't seen in .NET yet.
Yeah, I think it would be nice if we get some kind of a specification like this that describes, like we said, the size of the Lego nubbins such that we can kind of stop copying from other frameworks. And rather than us having Frank and Nancy Sinatra, we come up with something of our own, and then we watch the other guys go and implement it, you know?
Oh, yeah, that would be great. I would love to see that.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I'm glad that you're putting together pieces like this with your group. And then we'll put links on the show notes to all of these things so that folks who are listening who may be interested in this level of specification creation can get involved in Owen and join in the discussion.
Great. Yeah, we're actually, that would be really great. We're looking for as much input from as many different use cases, users as possible, and hoping to get the specification pretty much nailed down here in the next week or so, and then just start testing, start implementing, start getting some buzz around it and getting people using it kind of more in the real world. Very exciting.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.